Welcome back to the second episode of the Noble and Roos Show by Ball is Life. Today we are wrapping up bubble talk and then bringing in the Eastern Conference preview. Blessed and really excited to have 14-year NBA vet and two-time member of the Ball is Life podcast network, Caron Butler. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
We're shaking, man. It's 85 and sunny. It's not storming. Just getting off the lakes in Minnesota. Life is good.
Yeah, man. I'm chilling. Just another sunny day out in L.A., so it's all good. We're good.
Come on, man. L.A. is where it's at, baby. It's hot man. Over here in the valley, though.
Is it?
That's your spot?
It's cooking out here, man.
Man, I'm in the middle of the city. It's beautiful. I call it Cabo-fornia. Every day feels like Cabo. Every day.
Nice breeze, everything. No doubt.
So just wrapping up the final seeding game between the Blazers and Memphis. Did you catch that whole game?
Oh, absolutely. I've been watching pretty much every game since live action came back. And, you know, shout out to Dame Lillard and how he's been able to respond after that, you know, the Clippers loss. I thought he did a remarkable job. And I think that Pat Beverly, like, really set the stage, man. Like, when you think about him just talking, I think he got him all riled up to play against the Lakers.
Yes, sir.
Dame's a killer, man. You can't – there's certain guys that if you wake them up, they're going to get you, and I think Dame is definitely one of those guys.
Yeah, he's just – he's one of those dudes that, like, literally cut from a different cloth when you talk about his performance and his dominance on the game. He's a guy that, you know, doesn't just score points, but he scores all-purpose points. And seeing the way that he's been out there able to perform at this level when everything mattered, it's been remarkable.
So looking back on this bubble, I mean, it's pretty successful in my eyes, and it couldn't have gone any better in my eyes personally. But, I mean, everybody's got a different opinion on it. First of all, with this game, do you think they should start having a play-in game every year between, like, the 8 and 9 seeds to get into the final spot of the playoffs?
It's intriguing, but I also think that, you know, this was a teaser for, you know, the possible tournament. You know, when you think about what the tournament format would look like, and they just gave you like a sample of just, you know, two teams duking it out for that last position on a respective conference, and everybody was tuned in because the competition is like, you know, it's slimmer. It's only 3 games, and one team already have the advancement of 1 game in their pocket. And I think that everybody, no matter what the time frame was, whether you was on the East Coast, West Coast, wherever you was at, you was tuned in on some platform watching that game. So you're going to see a lot more of that being played within the future, I believe.
Yeah, I think it kind of takes the idea of – I don't know if y'all watch baseball at all, but in baseball they have wild card games, right? And so it's a winner-take-all, and this was a little different because Memphis would have to win 2 games, but for Portland it's a winner-take-all, so the stakes are high and, you know, a playoff entry's on the line. So, like, obviously we saw the competition was there. And the intrigue was there. Like, it was interesting to watch. Like, it was a big game. So I'm a fan of it. I think they should definitely try to replicate this.
No doubt.
Looking back on the bubble, Caron, I mean, what are your takes from it? I mean, what went well and what could have been a little better in your eyes?
Well,
if anything.
Beggars can't be choosers. And we've all been like beggars of live entertainment. So that's one. But what I would say what went extremely well is 0 test positive of COVID. I think that they invented a wheel that can be, you know, duplicated and recycled throughout other, you know, organizations. You talk about professional sports. And also, I just think that, you know, from the optics of it, outside of the fans, you have to think about it. It's only 19, 20,000 people that can literally be inside of an arena. So whether it's the season ticket holders or the loyal fans that always get those tickets or consume those tickets, everybody else in the world is watching the game from outside the arena. So the visual has been amazing in my eyes. I've been watching that and watching Mark Jackson and all those guys. When you talk about the calling of the game, being up close and seeing it, it still feels, you know, the same way it always felt.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. I mean, like, I was one of the people, honestly, that I didn't think it was going to change because at the end of the day, the product is all about the competition on the floor, right? And so the guys on the floor are still NBA players, and they still have a purpose to play. Like, they're not just kind of – I mean, we saw teams resting guys to gear up for the playoffs, but people were in there competing, you know? Like, we saw top-notch competition. And honestly, I almost like it a little better without the fans, because I feel like it gives guys a chance to, like, guys that we might not otherwise have seen kind of hoop, like maybe Gary Trent Jr. or, you know, I'm forgetting names off the top, but there were guys that had big games that I think otherwise would not have played like that. TJ Warren, right? Like, you got guys showing out. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You got guys showing out because it's just straight hooping. It's like if you go to 24-hour fitness, except it's an NBA game. You know what I mean? So I love that, personally.
That's hot, man. That's a hot take right there. You're throwing it out. So, Karan,
it's fun basketball, man.
No, I said at the beginning, I thought there'd be some people that thrive and there'd be some people that would decline a little bit because of the fans. But then talking to players a little bit, they're like, nah, no chance that's really happening. I mean, Karan, from your perspective, I mean, do you think that played a role in these guys playing good? And do you think players like LeBron didn't play as good or maybe up to his standards because there weren't any fans?
Well, you know, I think that LeBron, you know, plays the way he played because he's always looking at the second season, and that's the playoffs. So he always been extremely smart on how he goes about pacing himself. Other guys as well, because they're seasoned. I think with T.J. Warren, I don't know what happened or what got over him, but you think about, you know, practicing social distancing and all those things. Somebody clearly had access to a gym and was playing, because that brother didn't miss a beat. But when I think about some of the guys, like, I feel bad for, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Lakers that's been, you know, absent from the playoffs for quite some time. And then all of a sudden, like, the Laker faithfuls don't get an opportunity to experience, oh, snap, we're number one in the Western Conference, we're back in the playoffs, that atmosphere. But, you know, Milwaukee Bucks as well, but so many other teams are being robbed of that experience as well, because let's face it, we're still in the midst of a pandemic. People's lives are still being lost in the middle of all of this, and we're able to have some sense of, you know, normal. And I think that, you know, that's the perspective we got to have. And, you know, do not take it for granted. And I think the NBA has done a remarkable job at giving us some live entertainment.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm thankful that we have the game. And just to kind of add on to what you were saying of what's unfortunate, I mean, we, you know, we're potentially deprived of seeing a Lakers-Clippers playoff series, right? Which would have been crazy. I mean, L.A., bro, would have been going nuts. Personally, Karan, I'm from Houston. I'm a Rockets fan. And, you know, we got the Thunder with – now the Rockets have Harden, Westbrook, Jeff Green. They'd be going into Oklahoma City. You know what I mean? Chris Paul would be going into Houston. Like, there's some storylines that won't come to fruition because the fans won't be there. So, kind of unfortunate. But I am still happy that we have a product to watch, you know? So.
Trust me, they might be arguing in the bubble in the hallway or something. We might get some footage of that. You know what I mean? Like, that still works for me.
Chris Paul's going to be setting, you know, hotel wake-up calls for Harden at, like, 4 in the morning.
Hey, don't doubt it, man. I'm telling you, man. Whatever edge you can get, turn up the heat, turn off the heat, all that stuff, man. There's going to be a lot of stuff happening.
So it's pretty funny, the hotline for, like, ratting players out for trying to escape the bubble. Like, it's been kind of on the down low. I haven't heard anything. Any players reporting anybody as of, like, the last couple of weeks? I mean, have you guys heard anything there?
I mean, me personally, I haven't heard anything. I mean, after that Lou Williams experience, I think everybody just kind of recalibrated and just said, you know what, we're just going to eat the food here on campus and stay right here. So I think everybody's been playing it cool, looking at the big picture.
And
very good.
I don't know who it was. I think a Seattle Seahawks player just got cut for trying to sneak.
I saw that. Yes.
And he was trying to sneak a little side piece up in into the hotel, and he got cut. So, you know, I could see that, you know, maybe players are like, yo, I'm not even going to risk that. Let's just stick to hooping. So,
yeah. If you see a couple extra mascots, you know, walking around or something, people probably try to sneak in people that way or something, man. I don't know.
You're going to see the Spurs Coyote, and people are like, I thought they got eliminated. Right? You know, it's that.
Why is Minnie Mouse in the hallway?
All right, so let's get into these playoff predictions with the Eastern Conference. First matchup, we don't have to touch on very in depth. I don't think there's a ton to talk about there. It's the Milwaukee Bucks and Orlando Magic. Karan, you got any thoughts on that one, or just want to rub right over that one?
Well, you know what? The Magic, it could have made it interesting, but I think they got a ton of injuries. I don't know what the situation is with Markelle Fultz yet. Gordon, Jonathan, Isaac, you know, so many guys.
Isaac, losing Isaac hurts, especially when you're playing against Giannis.
Yeah, man, talking about that length and that physicality to kind of slow. No one's going to stop Giannis, but to possibly slow him down, that was their best chance. And you take that away, they're still going to be scrappy. But, you know, Milwaukee is just, you know, too good as collectives. I think that that'll be a, you know, gentleman's sweep for them through that series.
Yeah, I think it'll be 4-0. I think Milwaukee will sweep it. I don't even know if Orlando will get one. Orlando's good. They've got some young players that can make noise. I went to the University of Texas, so I'm always a fan of DJ Augustine. But I just don't think they can stack up, especially the way Milwaukee plays defense. They're going to force Orlando to shoot. I don't think Orlando can really shoot that well. Even their best shooters, I think, are streaky. Fournier's got game. I think he's got really underrated game, but I just can't really see them winning a game, honestly.
Yeah, I think if they had Jonathan Isaac, I think they'd be able to squeeze the game just with him being one of the better players in the league, I think, to slow down Giannis. Outside of that, I think every game will be 10-plus points. I don't think they'll even keep it within 10, 4-0 pretty easy. I don't even think there's many storylines here outside of Markelle looking to improve a bit. That's the only thing I can really say I'm looking forward to watching with Orlando in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's a big stage for him. If he's able to play, I don't know what the extent of his injury is, but I know he definitely don't want to miss that opportunity. It'll be a great stage for him to literally shoot all the balls.
Yeah.
The only headline I can really think about, though, from Orlando's perspective – is maybe the potential of looking to trade Aaron Gordon if they don't like the fit there and what they see in him. There's a lot of simultaneous stuff going on with their bigs there.
I mean, where does the value, I mean, looking at Aaron Gordon from a production standpoint, I don't think he's like the franchise guy. Maybe not even the number two. I think he can be a great number three option on a winning team. I love what he brings from an athleticism standpoint and all those things. But it's going to be interesting to see, like, what direction John Hammond and those guys go, you know, going forward. For sure.
Yeah. I think Aaron Gordon, I hope I'm not disrespectful with this comparison, but I think he's kind of like a younger Rudy Gay. He's athletic. He's got size. He can do some special things, but he doesn't really take you over the top necessarily. And he, so far in his career, despite putting up pretty good numbers, he hasn't been on like a winning team or led a winning team. And I think that's kind of where he's at. So I agree with Karan. I think he could be a great third piece. But, you know, he's going to – I forget, he either got a fat contract or he's looking for one, and he deserves to get one. So did he get one?
He's about up right now. But you think about Rudy Gay, too, in those – you know, those Memphis days and even some of the Sacramento years, you know, Rudy Gay was still, you know, 20 a night. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah, he scored a little differently, you know, than Aaron. So when you think about, like, the shooting ability, athleticism, like, Rudy, I think he's a little ahead in all those spaces. But Aaron Gordon, I can see the comparisons because, you know, take it. One night you may see astronomical numbers and then, you know, for 3-4 games straight, you might see mediocre performance, and I think that's something he's been battling for the duration of his career.
Yeah, I think you're right. Rudy definitely had more skill and more touch. He was more of like a pure scorer. I think Gordon is just more raw athleticism, and then the skill and the touch is there kind of in spurts, like you're saying. Like one night he's special, and then the next night, you know, I don't know, 14-8, 10-8, something like that.
Which is still good numbers.
Well, just of course.
To his measure, like what you're saying.
Right. And so he's gonna end up in a place where he's gonna get paid well, and the team is gonna have to take a calculated decision on how big of a role he's taking on for that team. You know, does he want to be a one or a two, or does he, you know, maybe take some type of different deal and end up as a three on a contender, something like that.
I don't know what you give him, a 9 or a 10.
he's been robbed. He's definitely been robbed of the dunk contest. I feel really bad for that because he's put together some creative dunks, some crazy dunks, brought the dunk contest back. So
shout out to D Wade on that one.
Oh man, Dwayne will never live that one down. Not at all. I mean, that comparison. So Aaron Gordon, that's been his biggest problem, though efficiency really hasn't improved with his jump shooting, and people have been waiting for that to develop as he's taken more shots throughout these past couple of years. But Rudy Gay, it's pretty crazy. Like, some people might argue, like, his best years have been in San Antonio later in his career just because he's been the most efficient there. So, I don't know, maybe it's all just about fit and system you're in for, like, somebody who plays like an Aaron Gordon or – I don't know. I've always believed in him, and it's just I hate the fit with him, Isaac, Vooch, and then trying to work in Bamba. I just don't think it works.
I got a lot of like pieces, man. Like, right. God to do the same thing. And, you know, I think John Hammond is, you know, doing a remarkable job is trying to get as much talent on the roster as possible and then electing to shop whatever pieces and build through that way. Because, let's face it, like, a lot of time in free agency – you know, Orlando Magic don't land like that well of a talent. So to do it, you know, via trade or something like that and build on the fly via draft, I think that that's the excellent way of going about it. And John Hammond is in the process of doing that.
Absolutely. So on to the next series, we got the 2-seed Toronto Raptors versus the Brooklyn Nets. Nets, it's pretty amazing. I mean, they're just finding points. I mean, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris are playing out of their minds right now. Then you got, I mean, just random guys scoring left and right for these guys. I personally think they're going to squeeze out a game or two. I think this series is going to be 4-1 Toronto. That's what I'm going to settle with, 4-1. But I do think they're going to play Toronto pretty tight most of the series if they're hitting shots.
I mean, I think that's a great headline. No story here. Like, I think that the real story isn't going to, you know, presume until Kevin Durant and Kyrie and Spencer Dinwiddie and all those guys, you know, join back together. So I think, you know, as well, Gentlemen Sweet in this series also, not enough firepower. When you look at Toronto, you think about OG and Ibaka and Lowry and Gasol and all the guys. Like, I just think that Siakam, they're battle-tested, one. They've been slept on and doubted on by numerous people, including myself. And when you think about their weakness of disposition on being able to guard isolation basketball, which they're great at, so LeVert, like, that kind of slows him down significantly, and that's the bulk of the offense for the Nets. And then when you also think about how they is – how good they are at defensive possessions and managing the pace. Coach Nurse does a remarkable job at, you know, just adjusting to personnel. So I love the Raptors, man. And, you know, to take it a little step further, that's one of my favorites, you know, coming out of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, honestly, I wanted the Nets to play the Bucks because I thought that would have been a more interesting matchup just because Milwaukee's whole – defensive scheme kind of relies on making you just out shoot yourself out of games, right? They'll give up the corner threes. They'll pack the paint and just make you shoot. And New Jersey, Brooklyn likes to do that. So I could see them, you know, making that interesting, maybe winning like one or two, maybe. But against Toronto, I think it's gentleman sweep, five games. Toronto's versatile. They have one of the most complete rosters, I think, in the whole NBA. They can pretty much do anything. They can switch everything. They have length. They have shooting, so they can kind of neutralize what Brooklyn does. And then on top of that, they have creating from the front court with Gasol and Ibaka, and they just play sound defense. They're very well coached. I'm with Karan. I think that them and Boston have tremendous potential to go far in the playoffs. I think Brooklyn, Toronto, gentlemen sweep.
Both of you, damn. You guys even think these games are going to be close?
I think Brooklyn's got enough. They'll shoot enough, man. They'll shoot enough to make it interesting. And, you know, I mean, they have, like, a lot of guys that can just kind of 3-and-D, but I think they're going to run out of gas at the end of the day.
Yeah, come on, man. They don't have no depth. I just think that they don't have enough bodies. Like, yeah. When you think about the Raptors, like, they're battle-tested, man. They're ready.
Yeah.
They got the G League All-Stars on their bench every night. It's unbelievable. They just – a new guy pops up out of nowhere looking like he's a breakout candidate. I had Caris LeVert as my most improved player before the year, and then he got injured. However, August, I mean, he should have been right on the all-bubble team. He finished with 27-6-7 and then 50% from the field. I mean, that was pretty incredible, leading them to 5-2. Do you believe that he can be that third wheel for the Nets, or is he more playing for possibly getting traded, raising his draft trade stock?
Well, I think everybody, with the exception of, you know, LeVert right now, is just, you know, playing and auditioning. And that's the beautiful thing about, you know, making it into the playoffs and having that opportunity and, you know, participating in the bubble play. Like, every time you step out there, it's a great chance and opportunity to audition. And you think about the pieces that's coming back next season. You know, Kevin Durant, one, Kyrie Irving, Spencer Dinwiddie, those guys, like, you're thinking about championship. You know, they're going to try to, you know, win championships. They have a window of about, you know, 3 to 5 years, and they have to capitalize on that opportunity. And, you know, I think that, you know, whoever can be an asset to that format and that foundation that they have established, they will be around. And who isn't, if they can go ahead and, you know, be used as a carrot to retrieve assets, then that's what's going to happen.
Do you think they can pay all these guys? Because I think Joe Harris is going to be getting some pretty nice offers. Dinwiddie's contract's coming up here sooner than later, too. And I think it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to – I mean, I know the cap is going to be different now when you think about
right.
revenue and everything that's happening, you know, in the world. So I don't think that they'd be able to pay everyone. But you can see a ton of rental situations, you know, keeping people for half the seasons and offsetting them and trying to get something just as similar or valuable, or trying to, you know, build on the fly with, you know, obtaining picks and things like that. But, you know, I think Harris, you know, for the foreseeable future, when you think about championship pieces and how they fit in and how, you know, the history of the game has been built, foundational pieces, you have the dynamic guys. And then you have that third, fourth option guys that can knock down shots, that can defend, you know, a few positions. And I think that Harris is a championship piece, you know, to a winning team. So his value, you can't really put a number on his value. So I think he's going to be an asset that the Nets try to keep.
Yeah, I think he might be the most valuable of those three guys there for sure.
Yeah, and I think they're going to, once they get KD and Kyrie back, and they actually play and see what they've got, I think they're going to further be able to figure out, you know, at the margins, what do they need to improve? What are those missing, you know, championship role-playing pieces that they need to surround them with? So I think it'll take – like, they have enough – they have a lot of players and assets to kind of flip to make something happen. I just think they need to figure out what that is to shore it up.
Yeah, I love what LeVert's doing too, by the way. I think he's amplified his value, but let's face it, like, when Kyrie and KD come back, I mean, I'm not a I just don't think the ball would be in his hand that much. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, considering those guys are isolation players and need that feel and that touch. So when I look at Harris, I just think that he fits like a glove with the way that they
for
play.
Sure.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's hard to have 325 points per game scorers on a team. That doesn't come around too often. But it was pretty crazy. I mean, LeVert, I mean, is fifth in the league right now in the restricted area at 73% since it started. So, I mean, I think he adds a little value there.
That's it. Huge asset.
So, last big storyline of that series, I think Jacques Vaughn is coaching for his career a little bit here. I'm not so sold that they're going to hang around, keep him around. There's just been so much smoke with Ty Lue and a lot of these other assistants out there. And I don't know. It's tough. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on coaching situation in Brooklyn?
It's a lot of things out there. You think about the history of guys that's going to be available. You think Sam Cassell, Van Gundy, you think possibly Mark Jackson, you think of Ty Lue, that probably makes sense just because of the history. You think of Jason Kidd, he's been there before, not that personnel. So it's just a lot of names that make sense And I think that, you know, they have to be battle tested because they're going to be thrown into the fire immediately. And they're going to be expected to win immediately. And you have to be able to handle that, that New York hazing, so to speak. You know what I mean? So I could see any one of those guys, you know, stepping right in there and doing a great job with that roster.
I'd love to see Sam Cassell get a chance, honestly.
Yeah. That'd be sick.
Yeah, he's been on the bench with a lot of good teams. You know, he knows the game, obviously. So, yeah, I don't know. I would really like to see Sam Cassell get a chance. He's kind of one of those names that always gets floated, never gets hired for the head coaching gig. So, I don't know. I think it's got to be his time. And, you know, that's a good collection of talent. So
they might give Sam Cassell, like, the reboot job with the Bulls or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Throw him over there. That's the jobs he, like, they usually give us, man. Like, all right, you know, develop him.
Yeah. Speaking of the Bulls, my God, what a situation.
Yeah, man.
I thought they were going to burn down the streets. I thought that was going to be the biggest riot of the year, the way things were blowing up on Twitter. It was pretty wild. I mean, how excited those fans were. Jimmy B.
Yeah, I saw someone say Chicago reached its boiling point. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, sure.
That's good.
Rebuild.
Yeah, for real. Zach LaVine's talented, though, and I still think Lauri Markkanen, I hope I'm saying that right, has a lot of room to grow. But, yeah, bad situation. And I'm glad Chris Dunn got a chance to kind of hoop a little bit. I feel like in Minnesota he was kind of just non-existent and people, you know, wrote him off. But he kind of, you know, he had put up some decent numbers in Chicago to kind of redeem himself a little bit, I thought. So.
They got to go find their Nick Nurse. I mean, that's what everybody's trying to find now. I mean, who's the guy that's going to develop players next? And, I mean, there's a lot of good assistant coaches out there. And I don't know. It's tough to find because, obviously, there's only, like, what?
Speaking of Nick Nurse, Karan, who's your coach of the year? For me, it's Nick Nurse. I mean, you lose Kawhi, you lose Danny Green. It's either Nick Nurse or Billy Donovan, in my opinion.
I could go with Nick, Billy. And, you know, my dark horse would be Nick McMillan. I love the job that he's done with the Indiana Pacers and, you know, not having their star player
for quite
some time and still just doing a remarkable job at staying afloat. And, you know, you got to give Coach Vogel a ton of credit as well, even though LeBron is still LeBron. He's done a remarkable job. Think about this. For the first time in LeBron James' career, you have not heard rumblings about a coach being fired.
Yes, there we go.
This is the first time ever you never heard no rumblings because the Lakers hit the ground running and they've been playing extremely well. And that goes to the credit of, you know, Vogel and Jason Kidd and those guys, the coaching staff. First time ever in 17 seasons.
No, I agree. I haven't heard shit. It's dead silent on that front. Normally it's boiling all year, every year.
Yeah.
That's funny. I haven't thought about that storyline. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So, talking Indiana, that's my favorite series of the first round. Indiana at the 4, Miami at the 5.
Hold up.
Don't skip
Boston, though. We skip Boston.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Let's just dive into the 4-5.
I'm actually kind of –
I don't know.
I think it's unfortunate that we got to see Miami and Indiana go against each other so early because I feel like both of them could have gotten to the second round, honestly, depending on who you play, especially because Philly is banged up. So depending on like if Miami had dropped to the 6, you know, I could see them going toe-to-toe with Boston and I could see Philly losing to Indiana potentially. But
one of the greatest coaches in our game is Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah,
for sure.
You know, Miami has always been a team that held that hung their hat on the end on the defensive end of the floor. But now Eric's done a remarkable job at adapting to his personnel. So now offensively, while in the bubble, they're great. So I would have to say with the leadership of Jimmy Butler and with the history of, you know, not just letting T.J. Warren and those guys walk away with this series, I'm going to go with the Miami Heat in this series, but I think it's going to go 6 or 7. I think they're pretty evenly matched. You know, we look at, you know, from a coaching standpoint, we look at a personnel standpoint, with Brogdon and Dragic and all these different guys, it's going to be so many intriguing matchups with Bam Adebayo. I like what that series brings to the table, but if I was a betting man, I had to go with the Miami Heat in that series.
Yes, I say Heat in seven. Don't forget they got Iguodala, so they have that veteran presence who's, like you say, he's battle-tested. Duncan Robinson has had a heater all season.
I like him.
Man, he's lighting it up. And Dragic and Jimmy Butler's leadership. Like, look, he's one of those guys that I would imagine you hate to play against and you love to have on your team, that kind of thing. So I think he's going to lead those guys into battle. I got to go with Miami. Although Oladipo and Warren are going to go off. So we'll see.
So you got Indiana, who loves their long twos. They both have two different starting lineups. I mean, Miami's been hitting the three ball at a good clip right now. As much as I'd like to say Indiana's could pull this off because they won the season series 3-0, I'm also going Miami 4-3. I think this is going to be the best series of the first round, going seven games. It's just crazy to me because no Sabonis. Both teams, I mean, Myers Leonard, I mean, started every game for these guys this year. I know he's not the biggest name in the world, but to have one of your starters gone, I mean, the way they've been playing where they were at their peak, in my estimation, they've gone with a completely different lineup and they're constantly changing two or three of their guys every game. So they're not fully functioning and 100% with a structured starting five. Which, I mean, could work to their advantage, sure. But I just don't know, like, how many rounds it's going to take for them to get to 100% of what their current product is.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, Myers Leonard and the absence of Sabonis, but also think about another guy that was coming into his own with that ball club too, Jeremy Lamb. The way that he was performing and playing this season, you know, hit some big shots for them and was just fitting in like a glove. And, you know, fortunately, you know, it's a misfortune for him and that organization that he went down with that knee injury. You know, so I think they've been trying to recover ever since. And, you know, Victor Oladipo electing, you know, possibly not participating in the bubble, and then he eventually came and have been performing, you know, solid, you know. But at the same time, I just think that when you look at the Miami Heat, you talk about the culture, when you talk about their disposition and how they're going to come in, win your matchup. They got enough healthy bodies. They got veteran leadership. You got Udonis Haslem out there. He just hit a huge three. He's going to be poured into those guys. Like, I just think that they have a little bit more in the tank and more at stake, and I think they're going to impose their will on that series.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Indiana going super small, Aaron Holiday, Oladipo, Brogdon, three guards starting every game, and then you add in T.J. Warren as their power forward right now. You're right. I think that's a strong point with Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder. I mean, being bigger, bulkier guys, and that lineup, that starting lineup in the bubbles was -6 per 100 possessions. Like, they're a negative group, the group they've been starting every game. So. They got to figure out the right formula. Who knows? Maybe Miami could just run them out the way they've been playing and from top to bottom.
Yeah, I like it. Rushi.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I just think Miami's too versatile. You know, and they have the best front court player in Bam. I don't know who the best perimeter player is. I mean, T.J. Warren's been playing like it, but again, I'm riding with Jimmy Butler. You know, they're going to play defense. They have shooters. You know, they can spread them out. I think they can kind of play them different in different ways, and they're just more versatile. You know, if Warren's not hitting, at least so far in the bubble, when Warren hasn't been playing well, you know, they haven't ticked the same. I got a good chance to see the Pacers against the Rockets, and they went down to the wire against the Rockets without Westbrook even playing and without Daniel House as well. So I just think Miami's the better team, but I think it's going to be a good series. It's heated. So
playoff Iggy in full effect.
Straight up. I've seen that firsthand. And playoff Iggy's a killer, you know?
They need him. They're paying him to. They're paying him to bring it. So.
And in addition to that, I'm excited. Hopefully Miami wins because I think the better matchup against Milwaukee is Miami. And I think that series has a lot of potential. So I hope we get to see that. you know?
Yes, absolutely.
My other sleeper, I guess they're not a sleeper because they're the three seed, but Boston, Philly. Boston is dangerous. I think Boston is very – oh, there you go. I think Boston is dangerous, man. They have They got three guys scoring 20-plus. You know, a lot of people talk about the Rockets with small ball, but I really think Boston has been doing it for a majority of the season. It's like a bigger version of small ball, but, you know, when you think about it, they run Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Hayward, Marcus Smart, you know, Daniel Tyson, the big guy, you know. So I think they have a lot of length. They're well coached. They play good defense. They can shoot. They can score. And I just think Philly's too thin at the wing, especially without Ben Simmons. You know, they've got Horford and Embiid, which is kind of already an awkward fit. Tobias Harris is super talented, but after that, it's just kind of a different batch of like role player after role player that is not necessarily proven. So I honestly see Boston taking it in five, maybe six, if Embiid can take over
a couple. The 76ers got a lot of light. They have like four foremen, minus Ben Simmons and his versatility. And I think those guys all occupy starting positions. So when you have to play all of them, when you think about the matchup situation that you touched on, they actually have four guys that can go out there and get you anywhere from, you know, 20 to 50 points on any given night. When you think about Kemba Walker, who's been a late season add-in, a ton of their success and their development happened, you know, on the heels of Jason Tatum. I think he's all NBA player this year, first time NBA All-Star, and he's on his way to becoming a superstar and a generational talent. And then with the development of Jaylen Brown and, you know, Gordon Hayward, and then now you add Kemba to that mix, and Marcus Smart, those guys are seasoned. They are on the cusp of doing something special. And when I think of, you know, the injury to Ben Simmons, I just don't think that, you know, Tobias Harris and those guys can, you know, rally around and just cover so much that of a void that Ben Simmons kind of covered. You know, defensively, Ben Simmons was phenomenal. Yeah. It took Stan Van Gundy to show me like this clip of him defensively, the breakdown. I was like, yeah, he's solid. He was like, you need to see this clip. And I watched him guard like so many positions in the deflections and his activity on the defensive end of the floor. Now you take away that void, and we all know that, I mean, Brett Brown's not going to make a ton of adjustments, you know, in a playoff series. You know, you might see Joel Embiid out on the perimeter shooting threes for all I know this whole damn series. So, you know, I would have to give it to Boston in six.
That's where I'm at. I'm at Boston in six. It's going to be interesting who the second most important player for Philly is in this series. Like, Boston, it can just be a collective group all the time, and it doesn't matter if anybody ever plays 100% in this series, as long as everybody's playing 70 to 80. I think they can be just fine and cruise pretty good in a six-game series. But offensively, I think Philly's going to be there. But like you just said, Ben arguably being the defensive player of the year this year and being able to guard one through five, just covering so much ground there, I think it's going to be too tough for that lethal Boston offense.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, all of that aside too, I think what Karan was also kind of implying is that Boston has the coaching advantage, at least in my opinion. right?
You and, think?
Yeah.
Just put it out there.
And I think also, and this might be more of like an intangible or more of a who knows, we don't really know, but you've kind of seen – Embiid, you just see frustration when he's out there. I think he looks frustrated for, you know, a variety of reasons. But the team chemistry just kind of, especially without Simmons, it seems like it's out of whack. It seems like they're kind of in a funk, in addition to just kind of fitting awkwardly with you know, Horford and Embiid, which I think was not a smart personnel decision from the jump. But I just don't – like, I think they have talent. I don't think they have enough talent to match with Boston. And I think that they're just not on the same page as a team. To the point that if they get pushed to the brink, they might not, you know, have like the mental toughness to swing back and stay in it. So
I'm gonna say this too. If the 76ers aren't careful, that window can become a crack rather quickly.
Yeah.
When you think about injuries and when you think about having the proper coaching position and all those things, that window closes quickly. Think about Lob City and the Clippers and Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre and all of them. You know, we all was together and won a Pacific Division title and all these things that's happening. We didn't capitalize on the opportunities. And we thought that we had borrowed time, and those opportunities just got smaller and smaller where it literally just disappeared. And then you had to go through a whole rebuild process to bring the logo in and Doc Rivers to create what they have now. But that opportunity shrinks rather quickly. So, you know, I hope that the 76ers are really, you know, in the war room, got their thinking hats on, and move accordingly going forward.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to move on one of those contracts. I mean, I think they're definitely going to have to move on either Tobias Harris or Al Horford. Probably. I mean, I would guess they got to move on Horford, in my opinion. And then hopefully not, but they might even have to choose between Ben and Embiid down the line at some point. You know what I mean? So, yeah. I agree with you.
Tough choice.
Yeah.
So tell me this, though. Say if Joel Embiid plays to 100% of what he can play, that MVP-type candidate, he takes these guys to seven games or even pulls something out of his ass and wins the series. Because a lot of people out there, which is crazy to me, think if you put Joel Embiid and four shooters together, more magic might happen than him and Ben Simmons. I would never believe this. I'm not with it, but I think there's a world where, I mean, they could catch fire, shoot 40% from three or something like that for the series. I don't think there's a 0% chance Philly loses this series. I mean, wins the series. I think there is 20% chance they could win. If they were to win this series, though, would you guys think about trading Ben?
Well, just for the record, not to continually bring up the Rockets, but they played the Rockets yesterday, and they were 18-38 from three, and I was surprised. I was like, "Yo!" At one point, they were 16-28, and I was just like, "Yo, what the hell's happening?" So they could
momentum,
right? They could, but like we've seen, when you live and die by the three, and you're not that good of a 3-point shooting team, more often than not, you're going to die by the three. So it's not a 0% chance Embiid could take over, but like I was saying, I think there's some other stuff kind of bubbling beneath the surface, and he's not necessarily fully focused, and the team's not necessarily all on the same page for him to take over in that way that he would need to.
Yeah, I think you have to be in, what they say, optimum condition to do that. And, to my understanding, they've been monitoring him from a practice standpoint. So now he has to go, like, full throttle. Now, the thing that does help Embiid in this case is that there's no travel in between games. You know, it's all at one location. And I think that helps LeBron. I think it helps a lot of guys, that's a little, got a little more years and things like that, mileage to him. But in Embiid's case, I think it helps significantly. And if he's able to, manage that and be so efficient and not live on the perimeter, just pretty much, dominate his matchup and his position and draw double teams and help guys get open looks and opportunities like Thibault and Richardson and those guys. Like, it's possible. So, like, anything can happen. I mean, I think that everybody has a fighting chance at this thing because it's just so many unknowns in this climate, in this bubble. But at the same time, I think that when you think big picture for the 76ers and management, do you want that possibility? Because you want to show that, Embiid needs Ben Simmons and Ben Simmons need Embiid. So you don't want too much success coming out of there. And let's face it, they had to have a news conference to say that Brett Brown was going to be actively the coach for the 2020 season. Right. So that lets you know that where smoke's there is fire. So you want to probably not have that success where you can just make that move and move forward next season.
Right.
Yeah, his seat is as hot as any, I'd say. He's due. They're due to take a change. If they're not growing together on the court, I mean, something's got to change, and that's the easiest place when it's been pretty monotonous for a while. So wrapping up with this, Karan, I mean, do you think there's anybody out there that can challenge the Milwaukee Bucks?
Oh, absolutely. We talked about it's the Raptors.
Yeah.
I think the Raptors and the Boston Celtics are the two teams that I have Milwaukee coming out of the Eastern Conference.
Okay.
However, I would not be shocked if the Celtics or the Raptors came out of the Eastern Conference for all the things that we talked about. The Raptors are great in the half court. They're great with defensive schemes. They show you different looks. They got a ton of bodies that they can throw at you. Offensively, they play well as collectives. They have not a chip, but a boulder on their shoulder because a lot of people have doubted them, considering and including myself. So I think that when you add all that together and with the great direction of Coach Nurse, anything is possible. And I've seen them build a wall and take away real estate where Giannis had tough, difficult outings against them. And then you have a hybrid like Siakam. I'm not going to call no man Spicy P. So I'm just going to call him, you know, P. You know what I mean? Like, he's dope on the offensive end of the floor. He's a hybrid. He posed some threats at Giannis. And then also, I love the fact that, you know, I think that they're playing with a different age, just edge, just because Kawhi Leonard, the exit of him, leaving the team. And I just think that, you know what, if they can slow down Giannis, they put a lot of pressure on Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, and they have yet to show us that they can win series, you know, without Giannis playing absolutely like on at an MVP caliber level.
Yeah. I completely am on board with both those teams. I mean, Boston's number two in defense and Toronto's number one in the league in defense. So if anybody can help double team this guy and by collective group, I mean, it'd be those two teams. I completely agree. And I don't know which one I'd give the edge to over the other. I'd probably say Boston just because Jason Tatum, I think they got that player they can rely on, have that backbone. I mean, go for 35, 40 any night of the week. But, I mean, Toronto's got that deep run, that experience, and they know what it takes to get there. So it'll be interesting. I think they both have an equal opportunity.
Yeah. So I like to look at the ratings, like how the advanced, like offensive, defensive ratings. I don't put all my stock in them, but I think it usually gives you just an idea of where a team is at comprehensively on the season. And so Boston is one of the few teams that's top five in both offensive and defensive rating. Like I said, they're versatile. They can come at you from all angles. They're one of the, like, they have three guys that score 20 plus, and then they got Hayward, who I think gives you 17, 18 a night. So they're very versatile. And then Toronto, for the same reasons. They're long, they're athletic, they have the body types that can kind of match up against the length of the Bucks. They have a lot of shooting, so if Milwaukee gives them open shots, it might burn them. And we like Karan talked about, we've seen them wall Giannis off and force, you know, the rest of the team to beat them. They've lost doing so. And look, winning playoff series and actually winning it all, it just gives you a whole different perspective. Like Karan said, you're battle tested. So all of that stuff matters, man. So I think, I mean, obviously it's either going to be Milwaukee first for most people, but I really, really deep down feel like Boston or Toronto is going to upset. One of those two is going to make upset.
I would not be shocked.
At all. Yeah, at all. So, and
the question is, which team has that tough juice?
I got to go with the Raptors. Raptors got the tough
juice. There you go.
Raptors are some dogs.
Yeah.
You talk about Kyle Lowry, like the way he's bringing it, Siakam, the way he's playing.
VanVleet.
VanVleet, yeah. Hey, don't let somebody say that he got another baby on the way. He's really going to be born.
He's got twins and a contract season.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, if last season when they was like, yo, he got a baby on the way, the dude was just having out-of-body performances. So I said, if somebody say that his wife or his fiance is pregnant again now, oh, it's over.
And look, I don't like to reduce basketball to like one-on-one matchups because a lot of times in the game, switches happen, things happen off the ball. It's not really a one-on-one game across the board. But if you're looking at the game at individual matchups, you got Kyle Lowry and Eric Bledsoe. I like that matchup for Toronto. Like we talked about, Siakam has the length to kind of mitigate what Giannis can do theoretically. Ibaka's got the length. When you think of Brooke Lopez, Marc Gasol is on the other side for Toronto. Seasoned vet, very good defensively, very crafty in the front court, and he can stretch the floor similar to how Brooke Lopez does. So, I mean, across the board, man, it just looks good for Toronto to kind of be primed to pull that.
Very good. Well, really appreciate you coming on today, Karan. We'll wrap up with that. I just want to note, love that artwork in the background. That's fresh. Whatever you got going on back there, I like it.
Appreciate it.
Enjoy this playoff run, man. Really appreciate it.
Likewise, bro. Anytime.
Yeah, hey, thank you for taking the time, man. We really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, come on, man. We love talking hoops, baby. You know what it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Look forward to seeing you on NBA TV.
Moose Williams, Zach Noble, thank you for tuning in, guys.
Yep, salute.
Sir.
Welcome back to the second edition of the Noble and Roos Show by Ball is Life. We just finished up a really nice Eastern Conference preview with Caron Butler and one of his co-workers from time to time happens to join us today on his second appearance of a Ball is Life podcast. And his name is Eric Pincus. Eric, how are we doing today?
Not too bad. Looking forward to some playoffs.
Awesome. Great to have you. So what storyline are you looking most forward to with the Lakers?
Lakers. Well, you've got to shut down Damian Lillard. That's not going to be an easy thing. I'm just excited that we're here, you know, after all of this, to finally get to playoffs. There was a lot of question of what would they do? We got this bubble. Would it work? So many things could go wrong. We've gotten to this point. So it's pretty awesome just to, as they say, it's just good to be here. Just good to be here.
As a Lakers guy. Come on, man.
I'm saying for everybody to see all these teams play. I mean, even the Grizzlies to go out the way they went out was pretty damn cool with Ja going crazy. I mean, there's a lot to build for. The Suns, the way that they went perfect, didn't make it. So, you know, covering the Lakers as I do, we all want to see Lakers Clippers. I think everyone, but of course the Rockets fans and the, you know, every other fan of every other team in the West doesn't want to see that. But in LA, that's what we want to see. So I'm hoping that we get a chance to go to the conference finals and together, all of us watching this bubble situation and get to see some great basketball.
To that note, Eric, what do you think about the prospect, or how do you feel about the prospect of, you know, losing the potential of an LA versus LA showdown in the heart of LA, you know, with fans attending and kind of like that whole atmosphere?
Well, it's, you know, impacts me directly because as a reporter, I'm like, you know, I don't root for teams, but I have to root for myself and my own coverage and my own accessibility. I'm thinking you get to the conference finals, I get, you know, first round, second round, conference finals guaranteed if I get all, you know, Lakers, Clippers in a series. So I don't get to go to any of the games now. And, you know, I could have gone to the bubble and maybe, you know, whatever. That was never going to really happen for me. It's not really where I want to go at this point. I'm rooting from a distance for the NBA to succeed here. As far as home court, it's a double-edged thing where the Lakers have a huge advantage, home court versus Clippers, because Clipper home games are going to be packed with Laker fans. I mean, Clipper fans are great. But when you have the Warriors come in, it's about 50-50 Warriors Clippers. When you have Lakers in, when you have the Knicks in, you know, Knicks could be winning no games. You still have a ton of Knicks fans. So, you know, the Clippers don't have quite the same home court, but to a degree, that stuff is overrated. The players on the court are going to win. The best players, the best execution.
So it sounded like to me, you said you had an option to go to the bubble, but you opted out of it.
I mean, there were some discussions, and then there was also the possibility of being a reporter on the outside of the bubble. They have two levels of reporting.
Right.
And, you know, there's still the possibility I could stay on the outside of the bubble, go to some of that. But realistically, you know, I've got family, young, you know, my kids are older now. Two are in high school, one's in elementary school, or rather middle school. But I don't know. I don't think for where I'm at, I don't. You know, my focus is mostly on the business of the NBA anyway.
For
it's
sure.
Not really purposeful for me to be there. There are other great reporters who are going to handle that.
So getting straight to the basketball, I think one of the most, you know, the most obvious storylines for the Lakers is, I think, Rondo's health. I've seen a lot of conflicting things. Some Laker fans seem to like Rondo. Some Laker fans seem to think that the team is better off without him on the court. But either way, regardless of how you feel about him, he does bring, you know, a veteran presence. He brings experience. And quite frankly, I'm interested to see or to know from you what you think the lineup and the rotations are going to look like with Rondo there, with Rondo out. are Jared Smith and Deion Waiters going to play bigger roles, you know, Caruso?
Right, sure. Well, you know, it's the answer is really like, are they better off with Rondo or without Rondo? And the answer is both, right? It really is. Like, the way to stop the Lakers, and we'll see if teams can do it, is heavy, heavy ball pressure, like 94 feet the whole way. Just make it so that by the time LeBron is able to initiate the offense, they're low in the shot clock. That leads to like these little lobs up to AD while guarded in the post. You know, like a guy like PJ Tucker is not a great like AD matchup, but in the post he can handle it for the amount. You know, if it's not, if the action isn't created properly and it's just a dump down to AD, when it's he's low and strong, right? So that's the idea. And so like Rondo is not he needs the ball to be effective. He's not a good shooter, though he can be a good shooter in stretches. We've seen he'll go 3 weeks and he'll shoot like 45%, and then he'll go another 3 weeks and shoot 22%, right? So a player like that doesn't fit well with LeBron because he needs the ball and he can't shoot. So, you know, when Rondo's hot, sure. But when he's not, he doesn't really help. He's not the defender he used to be. So there's that negative side of, yeah, they're better off with Caruso. You can see what Waiters can do. He can drive to the basket and score creatively for himself, which Rondo can't at this point at the same level. So you say like, well, where does Rondo help? It's when those teams are doing what I described to the Lakers, where they're having trouble getting the ball up. Well, Rondo can get the ball up. He can get the offense going so that they're not so reliant on LeBron. And over the course of a series, and even over the course of a game, that might be hugely valuable. And, you know, there's just a point in any game or any series where the offense just dies out and you need someone who can help do something, create something. And that's not going to be KCP and Danny Green. It's not going to be, you know, maybe a tiny bit Kyle Kuzma, but not realistically. He's not someone who's going to create that offense. So if you're relying on Deion Waiters to be that, that's a scary thought, you know, like historically he's a fun player because he's a wild card, because he does like amazing things on both sides of the coin, right? Like amazing. That was incredible. Or that was incredibly stupid. And not to say he's dumb or anything like that, because he's much brighter and he's got a great sense of how to play basketball. But he does call his own number way too much. And, you know, just like JaVale McGee, I find JaVale McGee to be, like, way more intelligent than, you know, the Shaq and the Fool would ever give you, you know, thought of. I mean, he's really a thoughtful human being and has great wisdom. But he is prone to making, like, silly mistakes. I think JaVale's cooled down over the years and gotten smarter as a player. I think Deion is still in that kind of, you know, Waiters Island zone every so often where it's like, dude, what are you doing kind of thing. Right. Plus his jump shot is, the form's a little, you know,
streaky,
hurtful to my eyes.
So from my perspective, I always tell everyone I'm a Rockets fan, okay, first and foremost. And from a Rockets fan's perspective, with respect to how they match up potentially with the Lakers, one thing that encourages me is the lack of dribble penetration outside of LeBron. And I think losing Avery Bradley hurts in that respect. Not that he was much of a dribble penetrator by definition, but he had the ability to get into the teeth of the defense, moving off ball and catching with momentum and kind of getting into that second layer. How do you think LA is going to be able to solve those issues? And do you think it's going to be an issue against Portland in the first round matchup? And how do you think that matchup is going to go? What's your pick?
Well, if we focus on Portland, like, it's easy to look at Dame and say, you know, they have to weather, you know, Damian Lillard. The challenge is that the Blazers are not good defensively, which is perfect for the Lakers right now because their offense isn't great yet. In the bubble, it started terribly. And if you watch LeBron, I don't know if it was that he wasn't ready or he wasn't trying, but he didn't look like LeBron. And if he's not going to be himself, he's the entire engine that makes this team work. So that's kind of the starting point. You're playing up against Portland, and now the Lakers should be unshackled. So, you know, look, if they're going to go down because their offense is terrible, it'll happen quickly because, you know, the Blazers are going to score 115, 120 points, 100, who knows? They're going to put up a lot of points. That CJ McCollum isn't entirely healthy is a concern. We saw he had a big game to close out the Grizzlies, but I'm concerned over time, over a series where they're playing every other day and it's rushed and they just finished up this heavy load where they had to just basically win almost every game in the bubble. And so, you know, if Dame is scoring 50 points a game, which is probably more than he will, like let's say he says, let's say I'll give him 40 a game, right? If CJ's scoring 25, 65 points from their backcourt, now they can compete. But if CJ is down to 12 and they're holding Dame to 40, that's like 50-something points. And then you've got to handle, you know, AD and LeBron scoring. And you know, all these issues that you said about the Lakers' dribble penetration, they're entirely reliant on LeBron. But LeBron's pretty damn good. And so it's easier said than done to deal with that. And they don't have great defenders at that position. Carmelo's not going to be a great defender against LeBron. You know, Gary Trent doesn't have the size physically. Someone like Zach Collins hasn't played particularly well. He's not going to be great against AD. He's probably their best option against AD, but he's not playing at his best. And I think Nurkic and Whiteside is a problem defensively for the Blazers. Nurkic brings more, but I think AD has the mobility to get around them. So, you know, it's, you know, Lakers have those bigs that can deal with Nurkic, with Dwight and JaVale, where they don't have to worry about scoring. It's not like Jonas Valanciunas, right, where they were just giving it to each other. They weren't really defending. You know, the Lakers have bigs they're going to throw out. So I don't love the matchup for the Blazers personally, but there is something about that playoff magic that, you know, Laker fans are familiar with, right, with Kobe and what he did over the course of his life. That one guy can do insane things that don't fit, that don't make sense in a basketball context, shots that shouldn't be taken. I mean, Lillard will pull up from the logo and drain a, you know, 30-something foot shot, and it's like, how do you defend that? You got to put someone up here and guard him all the way up here, and that could take Dwight out of the equation. You know, Dwight may find himself lost in this, so there's a lot of questions. I think the Lakers have the advantage. I have Lakers in five. Okay. I do think that the Blazers can spin this and turn this on its head if the Lakers aren't shooting well. If it's going to LeBron's creating shots and their kickouts to wide open guys and they're bricking every shot for multiple games, then, you know, they're not going to win.
Exactly. Do you give the Blazers more than a 10% chance to win this thing or what?
I mean, you know, it's hard to put a percentage number on it. I think they have a real shot. So I'm not going to say, yeah, I do. I think they have a legitimate shot to beat the Lakers. I'm picking the Lakers in five, which means I'm saying I have it's a strong pick for the Lakers, but it's not, it's not something that I go in and say, oh, yeah, this is – there's some series. Like I look at, you know, Clippers-Dallas, and I really like the matchup for the Clippers. I don't think they can – you know, I'm more confident in picking the Clippers over Dallas, and that's just a matchup thing. If this was any other team at the bottom, this was Utah, or if this was even if this was Dallas, I'd pick the Lakers much, you know, more strongly because, you know, as great as Luka is, LeBron is better, and then who's the next best player on the Mavericks, right?
Yep.
You've got Kawhi and Paul George who can match up with Luka. Like, where do the Mavericks go after that? So, you know, they're – matchups are that, you know, that's what the playoffs are all about, you know, how you match up with a team and how you're playing in that matchup and what you can do. So I'm not going to count the Blazers out entirely.
Okay, I love it. No, that makes me excited. I'm definitely with you. So I want to focus a couple more questions on this Lakers series and then we'll get into the other ones. But how worried are you about LeBron and the Lakers right now, the way they came into the bubble playoffs here? I mean, they didn't look 100% at all. And I mean, integrating a lot of these new guys, and then you got Rondo and I think KCP is coming back to get back to full strength. But I'm not as worried as many, but it seems like a lot of people are worried and almost playing the underdog card out there, which is just absolutely ridiculous to me.
Yeah. So I thought in the first couple of games, LeBron didn't look great. It didn't look like he was really ready and wasn't really applying his trade to his best ability, and that slowed down their engine. At the same time, I thought Kuzma looked really good. In stretches, AD looked amazing, and in stretches, he looked kind of bored. Once the Lakers clinched, it looked like they didn't care anymore. And as much as you want everybody to care and play every game like it's their last game, that's just not reality. Right. And they're in this new environment. Someone like KCP, you know, I said this earlier before the bubble. I said, I don't think he's going to play well at first. Because if you look at his track record, if you put KCP in a new situation, he's going to flounder until he's comfortable. Once he's comfortable, he's going to be himself. He's a good, solid player. He's not an A-level player, but he's a good defender. He's a really helpful role player. He can hit a lot of shots. He can score a little bit off the dribble. They have a couple of sets that they ran for Avery and KCP that they still run that either gets them a shot or a drive or a lob to Dwight or JaVale. They'll run that sort of thing. But when he's uncomfortable, he just doesn't handle it. Like when he had his legal situation, last year or whatever it was, maybe 2 years ago, whatever it was, he did not play well during that stretch. When he was pushed to the bench, he didn't play well at first. When you give him different plays, it's kind of like a Lamar Odom thing. Lamar Odom was kind of like that too. Some players just need to be comfortable. And once they're comfortable, I think KCP will be comfortable. And I think that if you look at his track record, his shooting numbers will arc up. It's a graph that, it's low, 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 and then it's going to jump right back up. I'm not too worried about the Lakers' 8 games that they played. I said they needed to win 2. And they won, did they win 3?
Yeah, I don't know. They won at least 3.
I didn't expect them to do much more than that, to be honest.
So I think I'm with you pretty much on everything there. You say Blazers in 5. I agree. Lakers in 5. I agree Lakers in 5 for the simplified reason. And I hate simplifying things because basketball is so complex. But at the end of the day, I think it's just kind of an overblown thing. The Blazers, look, they were playing for their playoff lives. They had everyone healthy. They still don't play defense. And like you said, they just put up numbers, and that's great. But look, I watch a team that has been entirely or, not entirely, but very heavily reliant on one guy scoring. And I know that when your team gets that type of contribution and you're still barely winning games against mediocre to below average competition, such as the Nets with all the injuries and the Grizzlies without Jaren Jackson, I just don't think it translates to beating LeBron in the playoffs, quite frankly. And I see a lot of people saying, hey, this might be the best 8th seed of all time, which I think is disrespectful to some of the great 8 seeds that we've seen. But I just don't think they're that good. I think they're fun. I think the story's fun. Carmelo's hitting big threes, at the end of games. Lillard's playing out of his mind. CJ's braving the back injury. Nurkic came back and he's playing very well, and he just had a really painful family loss. So that's another storyline. Condolences to him. But at the end of the day, I just don't think they're going to win. What do you think, Zach?
No, I got Lakers 4-2, but honestly, I think the Blazers have just as many chances, just as big of a chance as anybody else outside of the Heat Pacers to upset. Seriously, I think the Blazers, just because they're scoring prowess, and I don't know what offense is going to come with the Lakers, but I think Lakers have been my pick since the beginning of the season. I'm not ready to run on them, but the way Dame's playing is – ungodly right now and out of this world, and CJ's coming around fighting through that back. And if Melo can shoot 49%, let's be honest, and above 40% from 3, Gary Trent, I don't know. I don't think the Lakers, are going to come out full blast on defense right away. So Blazers would have to steal game 1 or 2 to get another one, I think. If they go down 2-0, I could see it just running away. Blazers are a team that needs home court advantage. They're a team that could suffer without getting the chance to play at home in the playoffs, I think, against a really good team. I think that's going to matter. Last question in regards to this series, I guess, who's going to be the most important for the Lakers going forward throughout this playoff run outside of the big 3, I guess?
Big 3 being Kuzma being the third? I don't know who the third Laker is. I've argued that Dwight could be the third most important Laker. You could argue that Caruso is the third most important Laker. You could argue that Kuzma, certainly from a scoring perspective. I don't know if there's a big 3 here. There's obvious 2. But they, they don't need, and this is a strength, they don't need great performances every night from the same guy. They just simply don't.
Yep.
You have, other than AD and LeBron, right? As if Kuzma gives you 20, great. You're probably going to win 20 plus. If you get 12 and 12 and 12 from 3 other guys, you're probably going to win. Like if it's an efficient 12 from KCP, Caruso, and guys are hitting their shots, you don't need a ton of points because, Lakers put a ton of pressure on you both offensively and defensively. Now, if they're shooting like crap and the whole team's shooting 20 something percent, then yeah, they're going to struggle. I don't think that's indicative of who they are. Danny Green could light this thing up. We've seen him go on stretches. Right. There's something, like you said, you gave the Blazers some credit that, that they could upset. We've all given them that credit, but I spent a lot of years watching Kobe when he was on subpar teams, and he would have incredible flurries of 50-point games, 60-point.
For sure.
You know, I was at those great Sun series where the Lakers went up and almost beat, you know, the better team won out. I mean, Kobe was playing, the starters were smush, and, you know, I love Brian Cook from my experience with him, but he's not, wasn't like an elite level basketball player. Kwame Brown, you know, Luke Walton, like Kobe got that team almost past, like, of that era, the Suns were like the team of that era outside of the Spurs always beating them. They were like the regular season team of that era, and the Lakers almost got by them. It is so hard to just win with one elite scorer like you were, you know, describing. And yes, CJ could. If CJ is going for 30 a game and Dame's going for 40 or 50, I mean, yeah, okay. But I'm not ready to say that. But, you know, the third most important Laker, I can't say who that is. So to say who the next most important Laker is, like the fourth, that's too vague for me, because this is a, it's a good thing. They're a team. But they need guys to step up. And if they don't, like those few games that we watched where they were just shooting bricks, it's going to be ugly.
So in the sake of time, we got about 8-9 minutes left. Let's try to blaze through the rest of the first round. Eric, who do you got? Clippers, Mavs. I think you said Clippers.
Yes, sir.
Clippers in how many?
Oh, let's see. I'll give you that in a second. I actually wrote that stuff down. I have it right here. I want to make sure I get it right.
Cue that Jeopardy.
My own prediction. Here it is. I have five. I love what Luka does, and against another team, it would have worked better. Against this team in particular,
right?
I just don't see it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the Clippers are way too versatile. They can defend you. They can outscore you. I'd say the Mavs might get hot and steal two, make it six, but ultimately Clips in five or six. Zach?
Yep, I'm going Clips in five as well. They'd need to be lighting it up. I mean, 40% from three in order to win a couple of these games. I just think the Clippers are way too deep. Favorite headline in that series, Eric, whether it's a matchup or a headline?
Who else is going to help Luka outside of, you know, just Curry?
I think Porzingis is a hell of a series. He's been shooting lights out.
31 and 11 in the bubble, averaging like 2.5 blocks as well, from up from 19 and 7 during the rest of the regular season. Pretty impressive.
Cool. He's going wild.
While I don't like the Clippers matchup against Porzingis on paper, in that they don't have anyone close to that size, I don't have the confidence in that, in Porzingis yet against the Clippers in the playoffs. I just can't. I feel like Luka's going to create a lot. I don't think they're going to get enough out of Porzingis, and I just think it's going to be, I think it's going to be bloody. I just don't think the Mavs are going to have a great time. It's not a good matchup for them. They would have done way better against Utah. They would have done way better, probably even against Denver. They might have. It would have been entertaining against the Lakers, but I don't think they would have fared well against Lakers either. I'm not ready to believe that Porzingis is going to deliver, even though he has a height advantage here.
So speaking of Utah and Denver, I don't mean to speed this up, but we're running out of time. I want to make sure we cover all the way up to the finals. Jazz Nuggets. I think one of the most boring matchups of the first round. But what do you think?
I had a lot of fives here. This is also in five. It's for Denver. Yeah. Utah is shorthanded and also not very good.
Yeah. And my Conley's out, they're even more shorthanded.
Right. So it is what it is. Denver is a great offensive team. They're not a very good defensive team. Utah's supposed to be this great defensive team. I'm not even sold that they are. And then they struggle to score. So I don't see how they're going to keep up. I don't think they're good enough defensively to stop the Nuggets, and I don't think they have the offense to keep up with the Nuggets. So, yeah, they'll win a game, maybe two, but I have it in five.
All right.
That's fair. I mean, they're not even a top five defense, and some may argue, I mean, they're not even like top seven, top ten. I mean, the way their statistics have shaken out this year, I think Donovan Mitchell would literally need to average 35 points in order for them to win any game, just because losing Boyan, Mike Conley, he hasn't been great all year, and, I mean – He's
out.
He's out for the first two or three games for sure. I mean, family over everything, of course.
You need Donovan Mitchell to have an outstanding and efficient series to win, and he's just not that.
It's not going to happen. I like Mitchell.
Moving to perhaps the most intriguing first-round matchup, Rockets-Thunder, and what will produce the Lakers' second-round opponent, assuming they win. What do you have there, and who do you want to see in terms of who do you think the Lakers would like to see?
This was the toughest for me to pick in this first round, and almost out of all the playoffs in the first round, even in East, I struggled the most with this. And I convinced myself for a while that the Thunder would win, but I did pick the Rockets in the end. The big question is Russell Westbrook and how I have it in six. I don't know how healthy Russell Westbrook is. He's questionable, I think, at the start of the series. So we don't even know exactly when is he available for game 5, 6, 7, or is he out of the series?
Today, Sham said that the Rockets are hopeful to get him back this weekend, which would align with game 3 on Saturday. I am more skeptical. I think he might be held out of game 3. I think it also might be contingent on how the series is going at that time.
Right. So, you know, and then if he's back, is he himself? You know, like sometimes a player come back. You know, so it's a problem because this team is really built around James Harden and Westbrook. And the whole idea of where the failings were for the Rockets when they were entirely built around James Harden without another guy who can create is that teams would send literally three guys to, you know, at half court and just try to stop him. And, you know, we saw the end. It works to a point, but over the course of a series, if you graft Harden's production and efficiency, it descends. Yeah. And I don't think it's that, he's, you know, choking or anything like that. It's that you're going up against the best defensive minds in the league, all these coaching staffs who have all this time to prepare and scheme up against you. And
doubling in half court.
Right. What are you supposed to do? And you're giving the ball to Eric Gordon is your next bet. And he hasn't been that healthy. And this team, you know, without – now you put in Westbrook or, you know, previously Chris Paul, and you have someone else who can create something. And it almost worked that year, you know, when Chris got hurt. They didn't have the chemistry the next year, last year. And then this year, you know, who knows? I think there's a real shot for the Rockets to be spectacular this postseason. And I think it's really possible for Chris Paul to just destroy them this season.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? So, like, the range for the Rockets are, like, their upside is as high as it gets, and their downside is as low as it gets. So, yeah. But I do have them ultimately winning. I don't love the depth of the Thunder. I think they're really, really, really solid through and through, but the Rockets don't have a ton of depth either, especially if Westbrook is out. So that's why it's not a confident pick, but I have Rockets in 6. So
I got Rockets in 5. I just don't think the Thunder got anybody to stop Harden. I don't think Chris Paul is going to really phase him, even though he'll probably be his biggest threat because he'll want to get under his skin a bit. I mean, Shea's going to be on him, but Shea's first big role in the playoffs. And so it's going to have to be by committee. I think Harden's going to light him up for sure.
We got about a minute left, so I want Eric to wrap his take up real quick. I'll just say the Thunder have three different guys that score 19 or more with Gallinari, Schroeder, and SGA. They have Chris Paul, who's got 18. They're very well balanced across the board. The Rockets are going to be depleted without Westbrook. I keep going back and forth. I think it's either team in 7. Eric, take us home. Yeah. What happens with the Lakers? I'm assuming we're going all the way. Is that where we're going with it?
Who poises the biggest threat for them as well?
I mean, the Clippers are obviously the biggest threat.
Conference do they not want to or do they want to see?
I mean, the Lakers in some ways want to see the Clippers, but if they got knocked out, that would not be, you know, a negative for them. I think they'd be happy to play anyone else because that's a team that is clearly the toughest matchup. But the Lakers posed some questions to the Clippers in that they're going to target Lou Williams entirely. Whenever he's on the floor, they're going to attack him. And if they can't figure out the Clippers how to stop that, then Lou's coming out. And if you take Lou out, that really diminishes what Montrez can do because his game is unlocked by what Lou Williams does. And now it becomes really like Kawhi and Paul George creating on their own. And Kawhi can do that. Question is, can he do it enough? You know, so in a 7-game series, and he might be able to. That's the truth. But I'm skeptical. I don't know if the Clippers have a great matchup for Anthony Davis. They do have good matchups for LeBron, but it's going to be a great series. I hope we get to that because I'd love to see it because I think they're the two best teams in the West. So you know, we'll see. There are all these outliers. All these teams could surprise, but I'm
who's the fringe? Who's the fringe Clippers player that you think the Lakers are most worried about? So we're talking not Kawhi, not Paul George, not even Lou or Trez. Who's that person on the fringe?
Well, I mean, you know, they won't admit, but, you know, Patrick Beverley can disrupt. The we talked about earlier, the biggest issue the Lakers have is if you overplay them the entire court, just make it hard for them to get going. And Beverley is like a guy who that's his game. So from that perspective, you know, we could say, oh, who else can score, hit big shots? No, it's Beverley. Just, you know, can he bother LeBron enough just handling the ball? You don't need to stop LeBron, but if you reduce production by 8%, 6%, 10%, you know, that's enough potentially. When you have guys like Kawhi and Paul George who can apply that pressure offensively, you just got to reduce the offensive efficiency for the Lakers just a little bit. It's not like, oh, hold LeBron to 0 points. We're talking about hold him to, you know, a lower percentage and a, you know, a few fewer assists, you know, or maybe a few bad jump shots. Like, that's it. That could be the difference in a game in the series.
Eric Pincus, just want to say thanks a lot for joining us again today. I really wish we didn't have a time crunch and we can get into the cap and how it's going to be affected by this bubble and this upcoming season. Want to get you on again down the road to discuss that. But hope this Laker ride keeps you busy, and thanks for coming on.
All right, guys. Anytime. Appreciate it.
I just want to squeeze in that I do owe it to my Rockets listeners that if Russell is healthy, which I think is a huge if at this point because he's got a soft tissue injury and they're holding him out, so I don't like the look of that. But if he is healthy, I think the Rockets have a lot in store for the Lakers in the second round, and we might get a great series if we can get that to happen. So we'll see.
I wouldn't mind seeing it. It would be fun if we can get there.
There we go. Well, thank you for taking the time, and we appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.